Hello and welcome to the How To Money podcast, a financial education podcast for young Australians aimed at opening up the conversation around money. Just a reminder that everything we cover in this podcast is financial education only and is not personal advice. If you do need advice, please see a qualified professional and do some research. Remember, it's your money, so take control. Hi Susan, welcome back to the How To Money podcast.
Hi, Kate, and it's a beautiful blue sky out there today in old Melbourne town.
We're spending a little bit of time today to talk about 10 ways to lose money when investing.
Oh, yes, that's always a favourite topic of mine.
So we've definitely been thinking about that recently.
Yes, because I'm always losing money.
I guess the aim is to just make just a bit more than you lose.
Yep, and I think the important thing is for new investors, you often hear all the brilliant stories from a friend, how they invested in Afterpay or Zip Money and suddenly it went up 100, 200% in a week or a month. But we don't often hear the disaster stories because, be honest, most of us do not want to tell you about our losses.
And we don't really want to hear about it. We want to hear the good news stories. We loved hearing about the Bitcoin millionaires of 2018, everyone jumping on the IPOs, so the initial public offerings for Amazon, and just being super rich now. So it's just, we're loving hearing all those great stories, but we don't really talk about
the Bitcoin bankrupts.
Yes.
You know, people who unfortunately mortgage their house, and it can cause, you know, not only loss of house, but often the loss of a marriage or family because the spouse is not happy when they find out that their house has been mortgaged to what would now appear a ridiculous craze.
And I think as a new investor, you're probably learning a lot from Google. You're probably looking and finding your information from Google. So a lot of the time you're going to be distracted left, right, every direction by different people and companies spruiking different ideas, trading strategies, products, and
noise.
Yes, noise. And it distracts you from, in essence, the basics of investing, which we try and cover here at How To Money. But so today we're just going to cover our favorite 10 ways to lose money when investing.
Yeah, so this is just a few ideas of what not to do, and maybe one or two of you have got some of your own, some new ones, so you can always send us some ideas.
Yes, we'd love to hear
how you've lost money.
Yes, it's good to learn from other people's mistakes in this because
saves you doing it yourself.
Saves you losing money. So not an exhausted list, but here's a few of ours. So the first one is probably my favourite, and I do try and bring this up with all my friends and family, is the great Aussie barbecue tip.
Or the taxi driver tip.
Yes.
Or your friend who knows someone who knows someone.
Or the hairdresser.
So really, it's listening to someone who tells you they've heard a rumour, they know a surefire thing.
Or they've just bought it themselves and they want to get validation.
Yes. So the more people who will buy it, of course, it goes up.
So usually this isn't done with bad intentions of the person telling you, but they might not know anything about it. They've just jumped onto a trend themselves, and they're just sharing something they've heard from someone else. And you've got to do your own research. Just because a friend or a taxi driver tells you about this next big stock doesn't mean it's actually the next big stock. So make sure you always do your own research.
Yeah. So, and you can't blame them if you go off and buy it yourself. So, I mean, they may give you an idea, and sometimes you can read something and that gives you an idea and you thought, well, is this worth it? I will now look into it. So it's great if they do give you that gem of an idea.
But you've definitely got to take ownership for your own decisions. Mm. And I hear a lot of people end up with a stock that's gone to zero. And I go, well, why'd you buy that? And they said, oh, someone told me it was good at the time. Hmm. And then they don't know why they've bought it and they don't know what to do with it.
And they don't follow it then.
Yeah.
And often that's the truth. You don't understand the business case and what this company was trying to do.
Mm. Okay. Now, my second one is online forums and stock pumpers.
It's a bit like the barbecue tip, but in social media now.
There are definitely, as you're learning, you'll definitely find some online forums that are quite popular with, especially with stock investing, but they are promoting other products as well. And it's also happening on Twitter. People are getting paid and not disclosing it and actually pumping up small company stocks and different products. And they've actually caught a few of these people out and they've been fined or given sort of restrictions. But you don't know online, especially, why someone's promoting you to buy or sell a particular stock. You don't know their intentions. You don't know if they're actually an employee, if they're going to make money out of it. Because if they promote a stock or a financial product and it goes up, and then they can sell and they might gain something from it. So,
yep. So it's like the barbecue tip, but in a new version, and it's not clear whether it's just honest, I really do like this company, or as Kate says, there is some further, you know, promotion. I mean, some of these companies, of course, have got PR people working behind the scenes now, and they are trying to push their name, whether it's in newspapers or online forums or social websites of some type.
Yeah, and what I have sort of discovered is there's actually, you can have influencers in people that are promoting financial products or small cap stocks, and they sort of go on the forum and spruik a stock, and they've got big followings, so people listen to them, but they're actually getting compensated in some form. So,
as always, it's, you know, why are people telling you this? What's in it for them?
And I find online there's a lot more herd mentality as well.
Yeah.
Sort of everyone will get excited or discouraged altogether.
Yeah, because it's a new way of information, which you couldn't do 20 years ago. So we didn't have that same sense of herd mentality.
Yeah. The third one is not questioning a free lunch or an investment seminar.
Well, again, it's another variation, isn't it? You do get offered, once your name is known, you've registered for a few things in the past. ASX runs some very good seminars. You might have registered there, or perhaps your stockbroker. You might have gone online, registered there, and they bring you in. And sometimes it's to listen to a CEO of a small cap or a CEO of a fund manager. And again, they're going to tell you the positive stories. And it might be a great place for you to learn, you know, what is these fund managers about? What is that stock about? But again, come home and do your own research. You know, why isn't anyone else following them? And it may be you'll discover a stock that no one follows and it will become the next big thing. But again, do your research.
Yeah, because no one's putting on these free seminars, lunches for free. They've got an angle, they've got something to push, they've got something to get out of it. And also I'm starting to see free strategy sessions or portfolio reviews where you hand over all of your data and they give you some ideas and things like that. But be very careful about that because you are giving them your financial information or personal details and they're coming back to you with some solutions. So be aware of those things as well.
And often they come back to you with solutions and quite a big price tag.
Yes.
You know, I'm giving you this advice, but every trade will cost, you know, literally hundreds of dollars for their advice, or they want your ongoing business, or they want your super, or they want your financial planning.
And as soon as the sales rep gets a whiff of you being a potential client, they will hound you.
Well, some might. So again, think, you know, what's in it for them? Do you understand the fees? It may be perfectly free. I went to a really interesting seminar because I was an investor in a large healthcare company, and I never could quite work out what they were trying to sell. They were saying, oh, we just want to understand why shareholders like this company. And it was really weird. I listened to them for about an hour. There was a number of people who ran self-managed super funds there and who held this share, and most of us had held it for a long time. And, yeah, we just didn't work out the game plan. So sometimes it is not obvious what we're trying to get out of you. They may have just been trying to get our names and addresses to actually push something else totally different.
The fourth one is trends. So that's probably, you've seen it recently with crypto, marijuana stocks, drone stocks, lithium, just jumping on any trend, having no idea what the background is, all of that stuff, and just jumping on because everyone else is, and your neighbour's telling you, your brother's telling you, your teacher's telling you, and just getting on it.
Yeah, and my sister-in-law turned around and said, oh, I think I'll invest in Bitcoin. And then this is from a lady who has never invested in anything in her life, and at 50 she's saying, I'm going to invest in Bitcoin. I'm just looking like mouth open, and how do you say, I don't think that's the right way to spend your hard-earned savings when it's something hard for most of us to follow,
let alone
a new investor.
Occasionally trends do stay, but often they just come and go, and it's been happening for hundreds of years, people jumping on trends back from tulip mania.
Yep, and, you know, you can look at, for example, Bitcoin, and there was many. It wasn't one Bitcoin to buy, or drones. There were many little companies that set up in drones, and some look fantastic, and maybe they will survive, but often...
There's a lot of hype at the start. You're getting really excited.
It takes a long time to commercialise. Yeah. You know, they've got to wait for government orders, or they've got to wait for the manufacturing. And we often don't realise, or perhaps it's not well explained, between the difference from the hype or the potential of that first drone they built, or that first prototype, to actually commercial and making profits.
I mean, when drones first started becoming commercial, we were very excited about that, and now we've just sort of got bored and moved on.
But yeah.
we would totally jump in on that trend.
Yeah. We're seeing hemp, marijuana, lithium, as you said, anything to do with electric cars seems to be another one. You know, there's a lot of small companies will start. One or two of them will be probably very successful. But do you know which one it is? Or do you buy, well, 10 of them, say, and just hope that one of them will turn out? But most of us can't really afford to play that game.
The next one is IPOs, so initial public offerings, and crowdfunding.
So IPOs have been around for a long time. So that's how a company may originally list onto the stock market here in Australia. They issue what we call a prospectus, which is a very large book that's hundreds of pages.
Full of legal jargon.
Illegal jargon. You now get it online. You can read. And right at the back, it'll have a form to fill in. Or you go to your broker and say you want to invest. So a minimum amount usually will issue so many shares. So it might be, you know, $10,000 gives you 10,000 shares. It could be something like that, or, you know, so they settle all out when it will list. They put in there the risks as they see it. It doesn't mean they've covered every risk known to man. It's just the risk that they see to this new company, any trading history. A lot of them do have trading histories. They're a private company going public. Who their bankers are, you know, all that sort of thing is very detailed in there.
And you're probably hearing about the recent IPOs of Lyft and Uber and Beyond Meat in the US. And there are these very big billion-dollar IPOs happening, but there's a lot of smaller ones happening in the background. Companies are listing on the Australian Stock Exchange every year that you're probably not hearing about unless you're hearing it through a broker or a stock research company or an online forum. That's often where you'll hear about these initial public offerings.
Yeah, and again, they can be paid. So there is a commission structure usually going from the company that, and a good broker will say, you know, 2% or 1.5% or whatever they're paying of your application fee is going to the broker.
And there was definitely some IPOs in Australia last year. You may not have heard of them, but they've gone down a lot since that initial listing price. So if you'd jumped on the bandwagon, been really excited, you'd actually be down a lot today.
So if there is a company you like the look at, it's unusual for IPOs in Australia, you know, if they listed $1 to go through $2 and upwards and never come back. So if there is something you like the look at, but you're not 100% knowledgeable on it, you don't know everything about the markets it's in, you don't know its competitors, follow it, read the IPO, and definitely follow it after listing. And often it does drift down we might get a correction in the market, you know, Christmas time and everything gets sold off. That's the time to buy it. Put it on your wish list, so to speak. watch it, follow it, see if it starts delivering on its promises. It might be a stock that over promises, or it might be a stock that, you know, under promises and sort of delivers more. So in the IPO, they put forward their prospectus in the sense of, well, this is our share, the number of sales, you know, our revenue forecast the next 12 months. So it's a great time as the company actually starts producing its results to go back and see, what did they say they were going to do? Were they going to sell 3 million widgets? Did they actually do that? Did they sell more? And then that might give you confidence to go, yep, I really do like the stock. It's doing what it said it will do. And that's very important. And then that may be a good time to buy.
And one thing on that I also wanted to mention, crowdfunding, because that's sort of been developed in the last few years. And it's recently become sort of more legalized in Australia by the government.
More popular, I'd say, with the younger investors. Yeah, so it's not something the older investors are used to.
There's Australian-specific platforms. They're letting you start investing in small companies. Now, these aren't necessarily going to be listed on the stock exchange. It might be a private crowdfunding. So some of the financial technology companies, the small startups, have been doing crowdfunding. And so their minimum's about $100. But it's even riskier because there's a lot less liquidity. Unless that company is bought out or lists eventually, I think it's going to be quite difficult if you do want to get your money out.
So they might offer you an online market, but that will be very restricted to other of those private investors who want to do it. And again, how much information do they have to give you? As much information as a listed company, which has to publish its accounts, you'd have to look into that. What sort of information as a private investor will I get?
Yeah.
And if it's a very sensitive area, they're going to be very careful about telling you, you know, all that forecasting information, because, you know, this might be an area that's ripe for competition, and they don't want to give all that away to the competitors. So do look at the sort of information you get in a crowdfunding.
And especially if they haven't launched their product yet, there could be many, many delays. So I definitely not plan on using the money for a while if you're going to lock it up in crowdfunding. It's a lot less liquid than a company that's listing on the Australian Stock Exchange.
But it's a good thing to look at. If it's an ethical thing that you really want to succeed, well, it's about putting your money where your mouth is.
But I think crowdfunding has the role there. It does have more risks associated, but it's a good opportunity for people to be involved in companies they believe in and support. And there are a lot of ethical focused businesses starting to crowdfund as well.
Yeah. So all options here to look at.
Okay. Number six, your investments are in someone else's name.
And you say, how could that happen, Kate?
And often sometimes you hear the stories and people transfer their money to their advisor or their broker, and the broker buys the shares, but the broker doesn't, or the advisor or whoever it is, doesn't get them in the investor's name. They buy them in their own name or the company's name. So there's always a risk there. That might even be part of their process. But if you're not the legal owner of whatever the investment is, when it comes to if something happens and you have to wind up the company, or someone's not
that
acting
broker needs money
ethically. I think there's been a few, ASIC have disqualified a few financial advisors and accountants, and they published them all online. So ASIC name and shame companies and people, because the advisor, the accountant has gone off and spent some of the money.
Yeah, there's been quite a few funds management and futures traders and things like that, which have ended up, when you bought the future or bought the share in the advisor's company, had a bit of fraud going on. The rules and the accounting standards weren't very well maintained, and hence the investors lost their money. So they thought they owned, you know, the 1,000 BHP shares, but when it came to the crunch and the company folded, it was much harder to prove because the shares had been sold because they're in the advisor's name.
And I think a few of I've been reading recently about a few of the hedge fund scandals in the US. And when you're putting your money in a fund, you're not specifically owning the underlying assets. You have units in the funds. And the fund managers, some of them went off and lived very extravagant lifestyles and cooked the books a little bit.
Yeah, and it's still happening.
Mm. So I don't want you to scare you off anything, but it's really good to make sure if you are using a intermediary, an accountant or an advisor.
Even an online broker.
Yeah, make sure the statements are in your name.
Yeah,
make
we talked about the chess holdings.
Yes.
So you get a chess holding, it's still in the post, it should come to your address, your name, very clearly. So don't just sort of get it and toss it in the bottom drawer. Mm. Take the 2 seconds, really. That's all it takes. Is my name on the top, my address, and is that what I brought? Is it the right number that I asked to buy? Is it the right company?
Yeah.
And I had a classic case of a friend of mine who brought a company, I think it was Ivanhoe something then. They thought they were buying one. It turned out there were two companies with the name Ivanhoe, who would have thought, and they were both in the resource. And instead of Ivanhoe Resources or something, they brought Ivanhoe Mines, and they're actually two quite different companies. So, you know, you mightn't realize there's a very similar firm or trading with similar codes out there. And BKX or BKW, just take a second and check before you throw that bit of paper in the bottom drawer.
I mean, all the online trading systems make it so much easier to place a trade in a minute, but it's easier than ever to make a mistake.
Yep.
The next one is the returns promised are out of this world.
Mm. Well, you know, the old one, if it promises, you know, too good to be true, it probably is.
Yeah, and I think that, but it gets people every time. Like ASIC are always releasing stats of the latest financial scams and how much Australians have been scammed of that year. And it's millions and millions of dollars. Mm. And it often comes back to sort of greed and wanting to get rich quick.
Mm. And it is. We like to think everyone's ethical, but we've talked about this before. It's really surprising how many scams out there and how many unethical people are out there. I mean, in the whole population, it's not too bad, but they do pick on certain people and people with money, people feeling a little bit guilty. I had on my mobile phone the other day the phone call on quite a well-spoken Australian voice this time telling me my tax was due and if I didn't press 1 immediately on this phone number, they were starting legal proceedings.
Mm.
And, you know, the tax office never rings you up and demands money. And luckily I've paid all my tax. But it is quite, you know, confrontational in the sense it's no longer the Nigerian, you know, scammer. And, you know, it can fool people quite easily. And if you feel a bit guilty, oh, I haven't paid my tax, oh, well, maybe they are chasing me up. Or if you're thinking I've lost money here, I'm trying to make it up somewhere else. We've all lost money.
That happens sometimes. People do lose some money. But
yep.
They were not supposed to be playing with that money to begin with, or they couldn't afford to lose it. And they take an even bigger risk to try and recover the money.
Yeah. So that pushes you under more pressure to take that bigger risk or that, you know, the barbecue tip because someone said it's a sure thing or the horse race bet, I mean.
Yeah, or there's something online, oh, we'll double your money in a week.
Yep.
Or this stock will go up 200%. Yeah. I promise you.
Yep, and I've had a financial plan that's promised me certain things. And I go, how can you, in this day and age, make those promises?
Yeah, I'd be very wary if anyone's promising you anything.
Yeah. So they can say on past performance it's doubled, but as you know, past performance.
And if their performance is amazing compared to the rest of the market, what are they actually doing? Are they taking some very massive risks or are they using some products underneath the fund or whatever it is to increase their return? So it's worth having a look if the fund is an outlier.
Mm.
There are circumstances where the fund managers have done a great job and they've just had an amazing year. But there's also other funds that are really outliers and you've got to look at what's going on underneath.
Yeah, so great losses and great gains. And it may be the funds that are really losing in the current season because they haven't gone in to certain tech stocks will be the great winners maybe next season. So you get that cyclical movements as well. But always it's, you know, any good fund manager will explain, oh, this is why we made those outperformances. Yeah. And they can give you a very clear, logical reason. But if you don't feel the reason's clear, again, you know, worst case, you could be in a pyramid scheme or like Bernie Madoff, and he just keeps taking the next person's money to keep pushing up the returns and paying out the
I think there's always going to be another scam or another someone promising big returns, and there's always going to be people who fall for it.
Yeah. Yeah, look, we've all fallen for other things in the time. It's a learning lesson.
Yes, definitely. Okay, number 8. You send your money off to the Cayman Islands in an effort to evade tax. So someone's promising you some sort of... There's a lot of people out there that promise you some sort of tax scheme or we can do something clever with your tax to reduce it or get you this amazing tax return or put you in this strange product.
Yes, or claim greater tax expenses and really there's any legitimate need to because they sort of do funny cash refunds. I have honestly stayed away from all that, but I've seen even large companies fall into that. They've been advised by tax lawyers to do certain things, and you know, as time goes on, you wonder whether that's the sort of thing they want to be in.
And just because it's not technically illegal,
but that can change, and then it doesn't always look good later on when you get exposed in the financial press. So,
some large companies in the overseas have been exposed for some things that were technically not illegal, but look pretty bad, and like putting money offshore and things like that.
So, you know, think about if you are using an accountant or a lawyer, you know, what type are they? Do they follow very strictly and very conservative rules here?
Are they registered through the appropriate body?
Yeah. And their type of clients. If they use, if you've got some very wealthy clients, are they looking to push that, you know, envelope? Or do they just use suburban, run-of-the-mill, mums and dads, as we say, small business clients that probably wouldn't be doing anything at all?
And if in doubt, the ATO website, all of the rules are published, so
But
you
go
to
an expert.
Yeah,
you know, you go to a tax accountant because they're supposed to know the rules, and you're not the expert. So, but you also rely on them to make sure what they're doing is in the straight and narrow. And if you said to them, "Let's do something dodgy," they should say, "No, that's not the type of accountant we are."
Yes,
you know, we don't push the envelope.
Yeah, but there's definitely a creative accountants out there that you can find if you're looking for something a bit different. But
and you might send it off, and of course, it never comes back.
Yeah,
because and that's very hard to report because you're the one who's maybe agreed to something that wasn't totally legit in the first place. So so they get you caught in that way.
And don't get caught up in some strange scam. Okay, number 9, deciding you're the next big day trader. Now, I think I've definitely thought that was a cool career for a few months when I was a few years ago. Some people do have that as a career, and I have met some serious day traders that actually have been doing it for many years. It's their full-time job. But they take it very seriously. They're up to it, studying. They're doing their preparation. It's not
capital.
They don't just log in for an hour a day. They're not living on a beach with their laptop on their lap. they're set up. They're doing proper work, and they're doing all of the things
and
involved.
A lot of if you read about day traders and good day traders, you actually have to understand your own mind, your own psychology, and you have to live within your own set of rules about when you buy, when you sell, when you stop, when you take profits. And that's hard for most of us. I often start with a good set of rules. A few months later, it's out the window.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're doing
and you can lose a lot of money very quickly if you just decide this and don't know what you're doing and end up leveraging or getting things.
And that stock's, you know, fallen 50% because you, I forgot about that, you know, that sort of thing. So I really think it's we're aiming at the newer investors. It'd be very unlikely anyone as a new investor would just go straight into day trading.
Yeah.
It's usually.
But I mean, you have one great win.
Yeah.
And then you think, oh, I can do this.
I can do this every day.
Yeah.
And don't stop your day job.
And just don't, you'll see there's a lot of pictures on Instagram appearing where people are just putting pictures up of their trading screens and stock charts and making day trading look glamorous and talking about how much they've made that month. But I'd say 99% of that's probably fake.
Yeah, again, you tell the good stories and you're often very alone, so you rely on the internet to communicate with people. Yeah.
And the few I've talked to, it is hard work. It's not glamorous.
It's not glamorous.
So don't fall for the Instagram pictures.
No.
Okay. And our final way to lose money when investing is having no idea what you're invested in.
No. Well, that's...
So that catches us time and time again. I think it catches every investor.
Mm. And it pretty much covers
all of the points we've mentioned, but... do your research, do your own research, make sure you're not just listening to the forum or your friend or whatever the website's telling you. Mm. So,
yeah, I mean, every now and then you get a tech company or something that is really hard to understand, and I've done quite well with the company. I've tried reading it. I've read articles on it. I've done all sorts. I still can't quite work out what they're doing, but they're doing it very well. That's all I can work out.
Mm.
And sometimes you brave it and go with it till it turns. But otherwise, always try and know, you know, what's the company doing, a couple of its main competitors, you know, what's its growth like. So all that basic stuff you can find in any book. And again, online, there's lots of teaching areas you can look at. But get a feel for that company. And also the other thing that saves a lot is just the churn and burn. We haven't really talked about churning and burning, getting in and out of companies, not day trading, but not holding a company for very long. Mm.
And that often comes down to not knowing why you own it. Because you're not sure when you should sell it, when you should buy more, because you're not really sure why you bought it in the first place.
So if you're here to invest rather than short-term trading, you're trying to think of firms that will grow with you, live with you, that you're looking for a five-year growth, because I don't want to be having to research every day of the week to find a new company because I've just sold that.
Mm.
I made, you know, a 5% loss. Now I've got to buy another one. I'll make another 5% or 10% loss. So I'll lose my money doing that.
Mm.
So you're much better off is actually thinking about the long-term hold. And I know, so one of the ways you can lose money is if you're not understanding, hence you're not prepared to suffer that 5% or 10% loss. Because if you think, really, at the end of the day, this is a jolly good company, and just because Mr. Trump said something that sent every stock that dealt with China down 20%, are you going to sell, or do you think, actually, this is just noise?
Because I know what this company does and I'm comfortable with my investment.
At the end of the day, the countries are still going, the company is still going, they're still going to trade. Yes, they might have a bad couple of months now because, you know, Trump's done this or somebody's done that. But, you know, that's the way to lose money, keep selling out. Oh, I've lost a bit, sell. Oh, buy another thing, lost, sell. There goes your capital. So it's sitting there for the long haul. Your capital will go down. But if it's a good company, eventually your capital will go up in most cases.
Mm.
So, you know, don't trade too often.
All right. Well, I hope some of these tips have helped you. And if you've fallen for some, don't worry, we all have. But it's about being more mindful when we go forward about what we are investing in and how we are consuming information. So we do have more resources on investing and buying shares online on our website, www.howtomoney.online. And if you have any questions at all or comments, suggestions following this episode, we'd love to hear from you. So you can contact us via our website as well or at Twitter at @HowToMoneyAustralia. Anyway, Susan, thanks for joining me on this episode.
Thanks, Kate.
And thanks for listening. You've been listening to the How To Money podcast.